Stocks on Wall Street crept higher on Tuesday. A string of mostly positive earnings pushed the S&P 500 closer to its all-time high. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ gained less than a third of a percent. Healthcare companies Johnson & Johnson and United Health posted quarterly results that beat Wall Street's expectations, and they raised their profit outlooks. J&J shares rose, but United Health shares lost their earlier gains, weighed down by investors' concerns over the Trump administration's proposal to end discounts from drug makers.
While Democrats await the release of the redacted Mueller report on Thursday, they've already gotten the ball rolling on another inquiry into President Donald Trump's finances. House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff said this week that their panels have issued subpoenas to Deutsche Bank and other financial institutions.
China's biggest auto show is shaping into a contest for automakers to show how serious they are about going electric in a country with a big appetite for battery-powered cars. This year's new models, targeting the world's biggest car market, include everything from low-cost, locally made EVs for city streets to a battery-powered supercar.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's the 17th of April, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. We'll have, of course, the latest market news coming up and the numbers from around the world. We'll also this morning talk to Dale Buss, one of our regular contributors here on the program, also a contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine. Wisconsin learning a tough lesson when mixing business and politics. Dale's also going to talk to us about some developing news involving Foxconn, where the CEO of that company stepping away. We'll have Dale at about 5:38 this morning. We're also still following the tragic fire involving Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Lots of questions now being asked about what was the fire safety system there and what other treasures around the world might be at risk. Dan Finnegan will be here this morning. He's a fire protection consultant for Siemens Smart Infrastructure, and we'll have Dan in our first segment this morning. We'll get to him momentarily. So let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning with futures pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street. Dow futures are up nearly a quarter of a percent, nearly 28 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures up nearly a quarter percent as well. Around the globe, in London, markets lower by a fraction, everything else higher there in Europe. In Germany and France, up by nearly a quarter of a percent. And in Asia, markets also in the green, with the Nikkei ending the day up a quarter percent, 56 points. And in Singapore, markets up by nearly a half a percent. In oil this morning in New York, 64.46 a barrel, up about 41 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. The Federal Aviation Administration says Boeing's software fix for the 737 MAX jetliner is operationally suitable. Federal regulator released a draft report of its review of the troubled jet that has been grounded following two crashes that killed nearly 350 people in the course of 5 months. The plane's anti-stall software may have contributed to the crashes, and Boeing has been working on an upgrade to fix the problem. Boeing conducted dozens of test flights using the software fix. The software still has to be approved by regulators. There is the New York Auto Show today. New development from Lincoln, taking the wraps off of its new compact SUV. The Corsair will be unveiled today at the New York Auto Show. The vehicle will take the place of the Lincoln MKC in the automaker's lineup and is based on the same architecture underneath the Ford Escape. Company officials say their target for the new SUV are drivers who want a smooth and quiet ride and aren't looking for the most powerful or fastest engine on the market. The Corsair will be built in Louisville, Kentucky. Front and center this morning, the follow-up to the tragic fire involving Notre Dame Cathedral. It appears now a good portion of the building might be able to be saved. They're going through it, still assessing the damage, trying to figure out what happened. We thought of the question, how many more of the world's treasures might be at risk from fire? And we thought we'd bring in Daniel Finnegan this morning, a fire protection consultant for Siemens Smart Infrastructure, for a conversation about this. Dan, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Well, good morning, Steve. I am clearly excited, but also very humbled to be here with you and your listeners this morning to talk about this important topic of fire safety in our country and in our world.
Well, we're glad to have you, and I know you work a lot about this with Siemens. They're working on smart cities and smart buildings and all kinds of stuff, but the question that I asked was, how many of the other world's treasures are possibly at risk of fire and not protected by sprinklers or some other fire protection system? I bet it's a lot.
Well, yeah, it would be a lot. It would be the majority by all means because, you know, when most of these facilities were built, obviously the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris was built 850 years ago. Our very own National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. was built in 1907. But there's an important caveat to put there. That, if you take a look at the picture of the National Cathedral, it actually has a lot of similarities to the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. But I was advised yesterday by the National Fire Sprinkler Association, which is the national voice for fire sprinkler safety, is that the National Cathedral is actually underway right now in installing fire sprinklers in their facility out there. So, you know, the fact of the matter is when these buildings were built, the codes didn't require fire sprinklers. In some cases, the technology wasn't available when they were built. But today, the technology is there for early warning detection, for very good fire protection, fire sprinkler systems, and all the necessary steps that need to be taken to ensure. But it's a question of economics. It's a question of aesthetics, unfortunately, sometimes. And the challenge is in front of us.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, is just the products that they were built with. I know that the Notre Dame, there was a lot of wood in that roof. I don't know if you've seen the satellite photos, but apparently the fire burned so hot it was visible on satellites from space, and that is the other part of the question. What are these buildings built of, and is it really feasible to even try to save some of them when they go on fire?
Well, you know, yes. As a matter of fact, our very own Holy Name Cathedral in Chicago had a fire on February 4th of 2009 in their roof attic structure area. And there's a common thread, Steve, on all these fires, almost all these fires, and that is that they're occurring during renovation or construction activities. And that is actually a global issue that we face in the fire safety world today. So, you know, when that building is sitting there, normal in its normal state, there's very little fire risk, there's very little fire load. But yes, the roofs, in most cases when they were built, are made of wood. That was the material that was available then. But what's happening during these repairs and renovations is we're bringing in the welding torches to weld piping, and we're working with flames, putting in duct work and stuff like that. And it's that ignition point, it's that extra added heat that gets into this wood, and sometimes it could be behind a false wall or above a false ceiling. They're not easily detected sometimes, and these catastrophes then flare up and occur.
Yeah, and I know this seems to be happening more often than not when there's a construction situation underway. What responsibility do those construction crews have to not only have some sort of fire suppression there when this first gets going, but to prevent some of this stuff from happening?
You know, in our national building and fire codes, which I spend my life working on, there are provisions and requirements in there of how to be fire safe during construction. But they're difficult to enforce, some of those provisions, and we have to do a better job in our country and globally to move forward on that. But, you know, there are standards, and this is coming out now on the Notre Dame deal, that all these facilities, especially the cultural facilities like this, have to have an emergency plan of what to do when there is a fire. And what we're hearing, and Lord knows the data we're hearing is still very preliminary, but we're hearing reports that there was a process in place the minute that fire broke out where people were removing the antiquities and the valuable art and things of that nature. We heard about that priest that ran through the building when it was on fire to get the crown of thorns that, is believed that Jesus wore. So, I mean, there's steps in place, but there's clearly a need for moving forward with fire sprinklers in these buildings, because that will be the first step. Early warning smoke detection is going to let people know there's a problem, and it's going to get the people out of there. But the fire sprinkler is going to put water on the fire. There's 150 years of experience in fire sprinklers. They're over 90% effective. and they put water on the fire and keep it under control, if not completely extinguish it, before the first responders and the firefighters get there to finish the job. So, you know, that will clearly be the message, I think, that all of the facilities similar to this are going to be looking hard at, that, you know, fire sprinklers and an improvement in the way they handle construction projects are probably going to race to the top.
Dan, we're talking about the Notre Dame fire, the aftermath of that, and what might we do to protect some of our treasures around the world. I know the people who are in charge of Notre Dame said that they are happy to see all of this money being donated, that they wanted to see that before they started renovations so that they could do some of the more modern things of, I'm guessing, fire protection in there as well. This is a pretty expensive proposition, though, isn't it?
Well, yes, Steve. You know, well, it clearly costs more to put in a fire sprinkler system in an existing building than it does a new building when you're building it. So that's a given. But you know what? It's dollars, but it's X number of dollars a square foot. And, you know, our mantra in fire protection is to protect the lives, property, and the business mission of the building and the entity that we're working with. And the good news here is we lost no lives. There was only one injury in the Notre Dame fire, and that was to a firefighter. But obviously that building suffered a lot, and the antiquities and the artwork is yet to be determined, but sounds like there were losses there. Today's world of technology in the fire sprinkler industry is at its pinnacle. You know, the whole idea with fire sprinklers is to get the right amount of water at the right pressure up to that sprinkler head that we see on the ceiling. And they have many ways of doing that today that are cost effective. There are different means of piping that are out there. There's lots of different designs of sprinkler heads. These systems are all generated by computer today, so they're using all the latest technology and flow dynamics to make these things as cost-effective as possible. They're clearly less costly to put in today than they were 30 years ago or more, or certainly when these places were being built. So I think this will be a wake-up call. You know, we had a wake-up call in America back in the 70s when there were the hotel fires in Las Vegas, and we lost hundreds of lives down there at the MGM Grand and the Las Vegas Hilton. The fire sprinkler industry stepped up along with the Marriotts and the Hiltons of the world, and every hotel across the world got sprinklered without even a code being required. I think we may see something similar to that in our very strategic and important facilities like cathedrals and these cultural facilities are one of a kind and that we just cannot afford to lose.
And you mentioned earlier, too, some of the infrastructure, the sensors, the smart infrastructure that can be available, too, to sort of sniff out these fires before they get going pretty significantly. Talk to us a little bit about some of the smart infrastructure.
Certainly, you know, in today's world, you know, you talk frequently about the Internet of Things and smart this and smart that, and the building fire alarm, fire detection systems today are right there. You know, we're able to detect smoke before you can even see the flame in many fire developing situations. The detectors and smoke apparatus can be built into ceiling structures where you don't even see them from an architectural standpoint. So being able to identify a fire in the incipient stage, identify exactly where it's at, is what the right tools are and able for us to stop the fire from growing to where we even have to activate the sprinkler system. But more importantly, we're able to get first responders coming in early and take the necessary steps in an emergency action plan to bring things under control. But early warning smoke detection is at a very high level of technology today.
Dan, did you see anything with the firefight here involving Notre Dame that concerned you? I know that the area was pretty hard to get to, I'm guessing, for some of the big ladder trucks. That's also a big concern in some of these locations, isn't it?
You know, it absolutely is, especially these existing places, once again, that were built 800 years ago. Today's codes, all that stuff is taken care of for fire department access. But on these existing facilities, from what I can tell, and once again, please, I'm thousands of miles away, and I have not seen final reports, but what I'm seeing on social media is the firefighters in Paris did a fantastic job. They saved the actual structure. We lost the roof. We lost certain areas. But it sounds like, from a firefighting strategic standpoint, that they did an outstanding job of preventing that building from collapsing by putting out the fire in the right places that protected the actual structure, which, good news is, I think was primarily masonry, but prevented that thing from even getting worse than it was. So I think hats off should go to those first responders and firefighters.
Dan, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for your expertise and insight on the story.
I'm always here to help in every way we can, Steve.
All right.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Dan Finnegan, fire protection consultant for Siemens Smart Infrastructure. You can find more about Siemens online at Siemens.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. The head of Foxconn Technology Group is planning to step away from day-to-day operations at the world's largest electronics provider, may even be mulling a run for president of Taiwan. Now, we talk about this today and its potential impact on investments in Wisconsin this morning. Dale Buss is here, a contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine. And he has been writing a lot about Foxconn and knows a lot about these topics. Dale, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks.
So I guess, you know, the big question people have is his stepping away going to impact the big development in Wisconsin, southeast Wisconsin?
Well, I'm not sure. It looks like he's borrowing a page from Trump here, maybe pushing away from the business and deciding to run for president. I don't know. Certainly, he and President Trump, Terry Gou, the CEO of Foxconn, and President Trump have had some dealings over the last couple of years because Gou has been kind of back and forth about what Foxconn's commitment exactly is to Wisconsin. And when he has seemed to back away from the original commitment to produce glass screens in Wisconsin with 13,000 jobs, President Trump has gotten Terry Gou on the phone and said, hey, wait a minute. I was there breaking ground with you and then Governor Scott Walker in 2017, and you said you're going to manufacture glass screens for TVs and other big uses in Wisconsin. Now you're saying, well, maybe we're just going to do a lot of engineering there. So Gou has already been back and forth about this a lot. It seems like we're on the other side of the climax of this story in the sense that it looks like Foxconn has renewed its commitment to Wisconsin to bring that number of jobs and a multi-billion dollar impact to the state. But it's probably not going to be in manufacturing huge glass screens that go into televisions. They're going to make smaller screens that you might use for laptops or even smartphones, and they're going to do a lot of engineering and development work there. And I'm not sure that anything that Gou might do now would directly affect that commitment at this point. It seems to have been kind of settled after a year or so of just being very much up in the air.
Yeah, and they're already moving earth and doing a lot of big of the, you know, laying the groundwork there. 13,000 jobs, though, you can see why Wisconsin would be nervous about that. I know Gou was quoted as saying the major direction of the company is still going to be guided by him. But you've covered a lot of these changes in head leadership of companies. Does it always work that way?
No, I mean, it can be totally unpredictable, right? And certainly when Scott Walker in 2017 was able to announce, we have landed the Foxconn project that every state or many states were after. You would not have predicted at that point that this project and all the uncertainty attached to it would end up helping result in his defeat in the in his reelection bid last fall. You just never would have predicted that. So these things can turn a bunch of different ways. And I think for Wisconsin and kind of the general Illinois, Wisconsin, let's say business ecosystem there, one of the bigger impacts is on Walker's dream of developing what he nicknamed Wisconn Valley, which was the idea of building a technology-based ecosystem there in the southeastern part of the state around the Foxconn plant and its suppliers, and trying to draw other technology companies there in addition to Foxconn. I'm not sure if that vision is ever really going to be able to develop cleanly anyway, especially given the the continuing uncertainty about exactly what Foxconn is going to do there. And in fact, you know, the kind of blow up of this deal in many ways matches what happened with Amazon and their decision against going into Manhattan with 25,000 new jobs for a second headquarters. I mean, these have been two huge developments in this field over the last year that have kind of shaken everybody up.
And, you know, this kind of brings the topic of mixing business with politics up again. Wisconsin has learned is kind of learning a lesson as it goes here with this. I know a number of other states are as well. You mentioned New York, but what are the pitfalls of tying your ribbon so tightly to one person who might be leading one of these companies or somebody else involved in politics that might impact your business?
Yeah, absolutely. And economic development and job creation and job commitments have become so personal as well as political in the era of Trump. I mean, this is a president who thinks nothing of buttonholing CEOs or calling them up and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, you're doing X, Y, Z. That is not creating jobs in America. That is not fitting my priority of American manufacturing. What in the heck are you doing to me? I mean, a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago now, he called, Donald Trump called Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, who had just announced a bunch of plant closings that were going to occur and since have occurred. And he said, what are you doing here? She said, hey, this is our strategy. We're trying to batten down the hatches a little bit. We've got to do this. But yeah, it's become very personal in a lot of ways as well as political. And before, during it, or after the, election of Donald Trump, you saw a lot of CEOs making moves they might not have otherwise, just to kind of take cover and give themselves some cover for what they knew was coming in terms of the president's emphasis on American jobs.
You have to wonder too, Dale, if Terry Gou's getting out while the getting's good. I know Foxconn has has run into some different problems, not only in its home base in Taiwan, but in the U.S. as well. And there were, that was part of the discussion, too, about pulling back from Wisconsin, that market had been drying up a little bit. Do you think that there might be some of that at play here as well?
Well, definitely, again, the personal is political. The trade tensions between the United States and China, which have been brought about by President Trump's trade war have impacted Gou and Foxconn, because most of Foxconn's empire are plants, especially in China, that make screens for smartphones. And that business has gotten a little mushy. You know, the iPhone isn't what it used to be, for example. And you've got these trade tensions kind of disrupting everything. And maybe he's just saying, the only way I can really impact this issue is to become president of Taiwan rather than the head of a company. Or maybe he's just feeling like there's nothing in particular he can do about it until Trump, you know, decides enough is enough. But, yeah, that's definitely a factor as well.
Yeah, and he says he's going to start writing a book, so maybe we'll get to see some of this in a book before he does run for office. Maybe
he's going to be busy.
Yeah, tell-all book or something. Dale, thank you for joining us this morning. This is a good story. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks.
Dale Buss this morning with us from Michigan. You can read his latest stuff always in Chief Executive Magazine at Forbes and at Wall Street Journal.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are up 27 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures up nearly a quarter of a percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A lot of red on my grain market screen yesterday. Disappointment over export numbers sent the corn and soybean markets lower. And better than expected wheat crop condition in the weekly progress report, also sending wheat lower. The July wheat contract down 15 cents for the day. July corn down 4 cents for the day. July soybeans down 11 cents. Turning to the livestock trade, the June lean hog contract lost $1.75 a hundredweight yesterday, but the June live cattle contract gained $1.22, and the April feeder cattle contract up 5 cents a hundredweight. And on the trade front, China would likely lift a ban on U.S. poultry as part of a trade deal and may buy more pork to meet a growing supply deficit. but it's still not willing to allow a prohibited growth drug used in roughly half of the U.S. hog herd. That according to two sources who have knowledge of the situation. But they could be facing a protein deficit with the continuation of new cases of African swine disease. And on the other side of the world, traders still talking about the European Union and its decision to reopen trade talks with the United States, but will not include agriculture in the trade talks. That has people like Senator Chuck Grassley wondering what's going on. He said a U.S.-EU trade deal that doesn't include agriculture just won't work. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. Netflix says it added a record amount of subscribers in the first few months of the year. In its quarterly earnings report, the streaming giant revealed that nearly 10 million people around the world joined its subscription service, bringing the total number of subscribers to about 150 million. Netflix is not expecting to keep up those numbers, though. The company believes second quarter growth will be slower than the first quarter. Netflix recently raised the cost of its base plan to $9 a month. Meanwhile, Netflix is now facing another competitor from a new Disney streaming service set to launch in November. The Justice Department is concerned about the $26 billion merger between T-Mobile and Sprint. Reports say officials from the Justice Department have told both companies that the deal in its current arrangement may not be approved. However, a final decision on the giant merger hasn't been made. Lawmakers and consumer groups have pushed for the merger to be scrapped because it would cut the number of nationwide wireless carriers from 4 to 3. The final word on the deal will likely come in the next couple of months. A new lawsuit is claiming that Apple knew its iPhone sales were in trouble last November continued to paint a positive outlook for investors. The lawsuit is accusing the tech giant of securities fraud and seeks to be class action and add all the people who bought Apple common stock in November and December. Apple has yet to respond to the lawsuit. The City of Roseville Employees Retirement Fund claims that Apple knew in November that the trade war with China was affecting iPhone demand there. They also knew that iPhone customers were replacing old batteries and holding on to their older models longer. Apple slashed production orders for new models and lowered prices, the lawsuit claims. However, Apple did not share that information with investors. Shares of the company fell by more than 9% when that news came out in January. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Wednesday, April 17. The nation's trade balance of trade for February is due today. Analysts are forecasting a trade deficit of $53.5 billion, nearly $2.5 billion more than January. Also on the calendar today, a Mortgage Bankers Association releases mortgage applications for the week. We'll also see the EIA Petroleum Status Report, and the Beige Book is due out today. We'll get some Fed speakers as well, Patrick Harker and James Bullard, on monetary policy. And on the earnings calendar today, Morgan Stanley releases earnings before the open. E-Trade, Las Vegas Sands, and Pier 1 Imports will follow after the closing bell today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, April the 17th.